Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody, but the Lakers got a huge win and got a little bit of help from Milwaukee. They got a little bit of help from the Utah Jazz. Though Milwaukee made us sweat a little bit for it, which I wasn't particularly fond of. The Lakers are already stressful enough, man. I don't need extra stress in watching whatever other basketball I happen to be having to pay attention to that night. So, but still, Lakers get games on both the Clippers and the Sacramento Kings. The Spurs won. Also, the Wolves lost. So I think the Lakers went back and leapfrogged those guys again. So it's going to be a continued insane playoff race. None of these teams are playing particularly well. Speaking of the Spurs, the Kings, the Lakers, the Clippers, even the Wolves, they're all around 500 if they aren't a game above 500 or a game below 500 over their last 10 games. But you know what? You take wins when you can get them. Today we're going to focus pretty much primarily on the game, what I saw from the new starting lineup. Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma continuing to play really, really well. There was a play that LeBron made, and actually that's what we're going to start today's first segment on. There was a play that LeBron made tonight that gave me more promise, that made me feel better about anything else that I've seen from LeBron. And he had that one slam dunk, the one hammer dunk that was a part of the four straight dunks that the Lakers had. There was the other dunk that he had where he went down the lane and he kind of like double pumped or triple pumped even. That was a good dunk. He does fine in those plays where he can just run fast, jump off that vaunted left leg, get up in the air, and is all right there. It's where he gets into it's where he has to change direction. It's where he gets into any kind of congestion in the lane and has to elevate off of 2 feet he still doesn't quite look 100%. But he had a play late in the fourth quarter where he got switched onto Drew Holiday. Either he was switched onto him or he just asked to guard him because Holiday was giving it to basically anybody he was guarding. Drew Holiday's a freaking badass. I love that guy's game. He's got a tough contract to try to acquire on top of Anthony Davis, but man, if the Pelicans really do go full rebuild and tear everything down and Drew Holiday hits the market in any way, shape, or form, there are way worse options out there than him. He can spread the floor. He really cares about defense and is good at it. He is strong. He's a bigger guard and that allows you to play a little bit more switchy styles of defense. He's so freaking good. I have a man crush on Drew Holiday. And he wears that really cool Ninja Turtles headband thing he's really good. Anywho, but LeBron got switched onto Drew Holiday and they were isolated at the top of the key. Holiday put a couple moves on him. LeBron stayed right there, showed good lateral movement, forced Holiday either into a tough shot or having to pass the ball off to somebody else to try to score. And you know, even Stan Van Gundy said that was some of the best defense that LeBron has played over the last since the All-Star break, really. Though I would almost argue since he got back from his injury. And look, these are you look for small things in recoveries, right? You look for small signs of progress. And for LeBron, for him to be able to stay in front of a point guard, right, and a good one at that, and be able to move laterally and trust his body to be able to do that kind of thing in a big possession when the Lakers needed a stop. That was leadership. That was regaining physical health. It was regaining trust in his physical health. It was everything that the Lakers, that I have really been looking for over the last, man, it feels like forever. But that was a huge play. And I would almost argue, now he hit that crazy three-pointer off of 1 foot where he's fading away and stuff, and as cool as that shot was and as big as that shot was, I would actually argue the more meaningful moment of the game was that play of that defensive play that he had against Jrue Holiday that, you know, I don't even think is going to show up in the scorebook at all. That's not going to show up in the box score at all, because I don't think he got a rebound. I don't think he got a steal. Might have gotten a deflection, maybe, but it's something that you won't see in the box score. It's something that you have to go back and look for in video, and it's the kind of thing that fans don't necessarily notice when there are counting stats to be looked at, right? So, by the way, LeBron winds up having a really good statistical game too, right? 33 points, I believe it was, 10 assists, 6 rebounds, made 4 three-pointers in the second half, missed those 2 free throws down the stretch of the game, which are still going to be a sticking point for me. I'm still going to be nervous about that in those key moments, but you know what? You take it. And that progress that he showed on that one play there, that might be something we look back on and say, that was one of those moments that we started to see pre-injury LeBron. And in order for the Lakers to make a run that they're going to have to make, he has to be pre-injury LeBron. If not better, maybe even, than pre-injury LeBron. Because, you know, these games are going to be played at a higher intensity level. The Lakers are going to get back to needing to win as often as they were when they were the 4 seed. So we'll see. But that was a huge play. It was a huge moment. And I hope while you were watching it, you took note. Otherwise, that's what I'm here for. We're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, I want to talk to you guys about Kyle Kuzma. I want to talk to you guys about Brandon Ingram. And this continued trend of these guys rising to the occasion as these games get more and more meaningful. So stick around. All right, so we rejoin you guys, and I want to look at both Kyle Kuzma's game, and I want to look at Brandon Ingram's game, and I want to use these to continue this narrative that I'm hoping to create, and pointing out that these guys are really rising to the occasion in some high-leverage moments. Before LeBron's big shot, that was off 1 foot in that corner fadeaway, nothing but net three-pointer. The bigger shot, or the shot that was just as big, was Ingram going isolation. He got into the defender, got up to the rim, had that really cool, he has huge hands, so he was able to extend the ball to the rim with his right hand, brought the ball back to his body, was still able to have to stay up in the air long enough to finish it over the top of over the front of the rim, and it was a big man move, and it was the kind of thing too where if you were watching from home, both the Van Gundy brothers were like, whoa, that's a big time play, and I hope, I really do hope, not from a standpoint of like trade value or anything like that, though it is important, and it will remain important as we get into the offseason. But I really do hope that the league in general, that the NBA fan in general, is starting to look at Brandon Ingram take this huge step forward over the last, I would say, month or so, right? And once again, he finishes the game. Ingram finished with 23 points, 6 boards, which are huge given the way that the Lakers started the game lineup-wise. He had 4 assists, no turnovers. He went 7 of 10 from the free throw line, which I'll take given the way that he has shot free throws all season, and 8 of 14 from the field. Like, those are, if you're looking for the perfect type of game, now maybe you would like a three-pointer or two from Ingram, but we can all have our gripes, and you can pick Nick's if you would like. But if you're looking for the perfect type of game that you want from Ingram when LeBron is able to produce the way that he did tonight or last night, this is what it looks like, right? Solid defense, He's able to help all over the score sheet. He's able to help all over the court. He had big shots when the Lakers need them there too. He helped get big stops when they needed them as well. It was quite the game, and it continues this trend of him and Kyle Kuzma, who in his own right finished he finished the game with 22 points. He finishes with 2 assists, 5 boards. He went 0 of 3 from 3-point range, which, you know, that's he still isn't quite the shooter I don't think that people think he is or want him to be, but he still goes 9 of 15 from the field, 4 of 6 from the free throw line, which is something I would like to see as his game matures and stuff. I'd like for him to find more ways to get to the free throw line, but if you look for the type of, you know, player B or player C type games that you want, statistically speaking, like if you get into a playoff series or a playoff game and LeBron gives you 33, 10, and 6, and then Kuzma and Ingram combine for 45 points and 11 rebounds, then I would like your chances against just about any opponent, so long as the rest of the Lakers are not demonstrably horrible, right? And so if they're able to continue this, and so far, since even with all of this talk of is our distraction a distraction? Is the playoff thing a distraction? Is trade talk a distraction? Is regaining chemistry in the locker room a distraction? With all of this noise that we continue to hear, and it's just like LeBron said, and I'll kind of echo it to a certain extent, where he said that, you know, if you can't deal with distractions, this isn't the organization for you, right? It rings a little hollow, as I said at the time, because he was creating those distractions, and he and his agent were creating those distractions. But if you're to look at the guys who have played well throughout all of this noise, and since the Lakers have come back from the All-Star break, Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram have, I would still argue, you know, I would say LeBron was a little bit better than Ingram last night, but I would still argue in aggregate that Ingram has probably still been the Lakers' best player since the All-Star break. Kyle Kuzma has probably been the Lakers' third best player since they came back from the All-Star break. And obviously you have LeBron there. And you know, as you get deeper into the season and hopefully into the postseason, that trend changes a little bit and LeBron winds up being far and away your best player, and then you hope that those guys keep up with him in the ways that they can. But for right now, this is exactly what you want to see from both Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram, and the fact that they've been able to pull this off says a lot about, you know, even if the Lakers don't trade them for Anthony Davis this upcoming summer and they're able to walk away with a free agent. Like, it's not, this was always the comment, right? This was always what we said before all the injuries really started mounting, was this team isn't that far off. We don't need a drastic change. And the way that Ingram is playing, the way that Kuzma is playing, the way that Hart is capable of playing, though again, he just can't hit the broadside of a barn right now, shooting the ball. But the way that these guys are playing, the way that Lonzo is capable of playing, if he's able to come back, more on him in a bit, that this team really isn't that far off, and that their continued growth and development and maturation process, that would help kind of close that gap between where the Lakers need to be and where they can get, let alone if you add a superstar to go with the growth of these young guys, right? Like, that was always the plan. That was the optimal plan, was acquire a second star this upcoming offseason. To be able to, you know, solidify some of the Lakers roster. You hope that these guys take steps forward and continue to take steps forward as players, both individually and in terms of what the team needs and the team construct, and you go forward that way, and you continue to build the roster that way. It just so happened, though, that because LeBron gets hurt, Lonzo gets hurt, everybody seems like gets hurt at one point or another this offseason, that the goals here or the style of team building changed. It just shifted. It turned on its head, and all of a sudden it was, no, we're desperate to get rid of everybody so that we can get Anthony Davis and build a team completely around superstars. And my thing is, and this I think remains to be the case, that if the Lakers are going to truly optimize this opportunity that they have right now, it's going to come not just through superstars and acquiring superstars like LeBron and maybe a second max guy this upcoming summer and whatever, but also through the growth and development of the young guys that were already here, that the last 5 years of rebuilding have allowed the Lakers to be able to have those guys. So again, shouts to Kyle Kuzma, huge ups to Brandon Ingram for his game. And the longer that this continues, the louder that noise is going to get that, you know, are we sure that we need to include literally everybody for Anthony Davis? And that's always been the goal, at the very least, for these kids this season is, okay, make your development, make your case for sticking around. And if you make it well enough, then maybe it takes one fewer of you if the Lakers really do want to make some kind of trade for a superstar this summer. And hopefully if this continues and Lonzo comes back relatively soon and relatively healthy, that they can get back on track with the optimized route of building this team. All right, we're going to take another quick second here, and when I come back, we are going to talk about this starting lineup that Luke Walton employed. The Lakers won, which is great, but I'm not so quick to just heap a ton of credit to him for it. And I thought the process to him getting there kind of speaks to a lot of the problems I have with professional coaches. So we'll get to that here in a second. The Lakers took JaVale out of the starting lineup and inserted Rajon Rondo into his spot, and essentially had Kyle Kuzma and LeBron at the 4/5, right? Neither of them were actually the center. Neither of them were actually the four, not just because of their similar statures height-wise, though LeBron is obviously much bigger. He's a lot thicker. But I would say, though, that, you know, because Anthony Davis, because Julius Randle prefer to operate near the basket, it didn't really matter who was guarding whom in those matchups, right? Whoever was guarding Davis was going to spend a ton of time around the rim. Whoever was guarding Randle was going to spend a ton of time around the rim. And you look at the way that Davis and Randle played, and it's kind of hard to just say, yeah, the Lakers won because they changed the starting lineup. Like, well, Davis didn't play the fourth quarter, which probably changes some of the way that at least the game goes, right? If it doesn't change the outcome, it at least changes the way that game looks down the stretch, because, you know, he went 22-8 in 21 minutes, playing like somebody who just didn't really want to get hurt, right? Julius Randle in 40 minutes goes for 35 points, 6 rebounds and 3 assists on 11 of 22 shooting, right? So, and 11 of 12 from the free throw line. So the Lakers really didn't have an answer for Randle until Josh Hart came in. And I've always kind of thought that Josh Hart is a better matchup for Julius Randle than anybody that the Lakers have, especially when he's healthy. But you know, we can't quite just say, like, yeah, the Lakers changed, Luke Walton changed the starting lineup, and look, they won. Like, that's way too big an oversimplification here. And you know, I tweeted out after the game about, you know, and look, Rajon Rondo finishes the game. He got near a triple-double. Yeah, he got near a triple-double, didn't actually get to it, with 11 points, 16 assists, and 7 rebounds, and only 2 turnovers, right? Like 16-2 in terms of turnover or assist-to-turnover ratio. Like, that's a really, really good offensive game. Though, you know, on a couple occasions, he passed up shots, or you know, in either from the outside or he was near the rim and he went assist hunting the way that he typically does. He didn't shoot really well, right? He goes 5 of 15 from the field, 1 of 4 from three-point range. Though, you know, I think in order for Rondo to work, like if Rondo is actually going to work in the Lakers offense, he has to take those shots, right? It keeps the defense honest. And for most of the season, he shot fairly well. So, a lot of people were thinking he was shooting too much. I thought he was taking what the defense was giving him. My bigger problem with him is the defensive side of the ball. And so, you know, looking, counting numbers aside and single game net rating numbers can be flawed because it's such a small sample size. But when Rondo sat, when he was on the court, he was basically a net neutral, right? I think the Lakers were slightly worse in terms of net rating when he was on the court. Let's see. Yeah, so his net rating was essentially neutral when he was on the court. But when he was off of it, the Lakers held an offensive rating of 107.1 to a defensive rating of 100, right? And I think that just speaks to I've used this analogy in my writing, and it's hard to really kind of contextualize it here, but have you ever seen, those of you who are boxing fans, sometimes a boxer will get down in a fight and know that they just have to swing away and hope that they knock the other person out before the final bell rings and they lose via scorecard? That's how Rondo plays defense right from the get-go of a game. He knows that if he goes out there and he tries to play defense straight up, he's going to lose either via TKO by the end of a thing, or actual knockout if he actually tries or whatever. But so what he tries to do is he tries to dive for steals. He tries to step in front of people for cheap charges. And what that does is if he doesn't succeed on those plays, he puts the Lakers in a worse spot because, you know, that person that he stepped away from is, you know, especially against a team like New Orleans, it's Jrue Holiday. It's a really good player. And against Memphis, it was Mike Conley, same kind of thing. It puts your defense in a tough spot. So, you know, Rondo's drunken sailor in a fight that he's about to lose type style of defense, like that winds up hurting the Lakers. And while he was good, very good offensively, he isn't capable offensively of impacting the game enough to make himself even a net neutral, let alone a net positive player. He finished the game with a total net rating of a negative 5.7. And you know, those numbers, anytime a number that you look at backs up so basically the way I handle analysis when I bring in stats into this thing is I'll look at a stat and I'll say, wait, that doesn't quite match what my eyes were telling me, right? And I'll go back and I'll watch it, and either I'll reformulate my take on what I actually saw and in paying closer attention to whatever it is that I was watching as watching live and then going back and seeing it in action once again later. But if it backs up what is painfully obvious, right, then, you know, your analysis is kind of sort of done, right? You still want to go back and you want to verify these things, but just defensively, Rondo hurts the team. And fortunately for the Lakers, he was able to give them a lot offensively. And you know, it winds up making up in a big part, in a big way, for what he leaves on the table defensively. It's why I'm so excited to get Lonzo back, because Lonzo just, the Lakers don't need an offensive genius at their point guard spot, because you have LeBron playing the way that he's capable of playing and Ingram playing the way that he's been playing of late, right? All you need from the point guard spot there is, all right, give me a willing shooter and a willing defender and you know, just don't screw up the rest of the game so that the other guys can allow their impact to really take hold on the game. And so with Rondo, if he doesn't play the way that he does that he did last night, then you really start to get into trouble. And you know, Luke Walton was asked after the game why he went with Rondo in the starting lineup, and he basically said that he needed to get Rondo going, that he felt like he was losing Rondo to a certain extent. And like my question to that is, if Rondo was a younger player, right? If JaVale McGee was a younger player and their moping was making it, you know, their moping was so obvious that you're concerned about their overall abilities as a player, would you go out of your way to really try to get them going in the way that you do a veteran? And when you look at the young guys that the Lakers have compared to their veterans, you could make a really solid argument, almost inarguable argument, that the younger counterparts are actually better than the veterans, right? And so you kind of, I understand what Walton is saying. Basically, the Lakers, while Lonzo Ball is out, they need Rondo to be fully focused on the task at hand. But the fact that they, you know, that you need to get these veterans focused, that it just kind of flies in the face of this idea that veterans are always the way to go, that they are more predictable. They're more predictable if they're good, right? It's a lot easier to bank on production from actual good veterans. But if you have guys who either are not as good as they once were physically, or you know, in terms of chemistry, aren't willing to buy in no matter what the role is that they might be playing, well, then they don't really fit within the team construct in the way that you need them to be able to do. And it's like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, again, he plays 7 minutes and, you know, he was just kind of there. And that's kind of, you know, fortunately in this one, he was just kind of there and he wasn't, you know, obviously hurting the Lakers in the way that he had over the last few games. But, you know, you need more from a guy who's making, I think he's making like $9 or $12 million this year. You need your second highest player to step up and be more than just kind of there. Fortunately, Reggie Bullock is so much better than he is that, you know, KCP's production is more of a luxury than a necessity. But, you know, it would be nice to get some of that luxury, right? Like beating the Pelicans 125 to 119, it's great that the Lakers get the win. But, you know, as this season goes on and as these games kind of mount up on each other, it'd be nice to get enough production from everybody that, you know, LeBron can play fewer than 37 minutes, that Ingram can play fewer than 40 minutes. In order to beat a team so much further down the standings as the Pelicans are from the Lakers. So, you know, the lineups, it still leaves a lot to be desired. Personally speaking, I think Mike Muscala should probably get a little bit more opportunity than he has been given to this point. I mean, the Lakers made that trade, and if you aren't going to start JaVale, because he isn't the player that maybe we thought he was earlier on this season, then you need to get a return on this trade at some point, right? Like, they were thinking that the return on the trade would be a return to the player that JaVale McGee was earlier on this season. But, like, even so, LeBron is subbing in late in the fourth quarter, midway through the fourth quarter, and I think JaVale probably knew that LeBron was subbing in for him. And JaVale makes that really stupid behind the back or between the legs pass in traffic. And it's just like if a young player did that, what would the response be there? Now, JaVale was benched. But, you know, if a young player did that, I would imagine they would get an earful on the way back to the bench, right? And so, you know, this double standard that, and it's not just Luke, it wasn't just Byron, obviously, seeing as Luke is now doing the same thing. It's something that all professional coaches tend to fall back on. They use veteran players almost as a crutch, and they give them a little bit more leeway that, you know, if you were to just look at things objectively and not really account for age and these kinds of things, that, you know, young guys wouldn't be able to get away with some of these things. You would probably go with the better player overall and not really like Luke Walton cited the caliber of player Rajon Rondo has been to this point in his career, right? Over the entirety of his career. But like, I don't give a rat's ass what kind of production he gave to the Boston Celtics. I don't care about that. I don't care about the series that he played in which he helped the Pelicans beat the Trailblazers last year. That has no that doesn't matter to me at all. What's he done for the Lakers this year? And he hasn't been good. He's either been hurt or he hasn't been good. And, you know, hopefully Lonzo gets back and you don't need to rely so heavily on Rajon Rondo. And like I said, I kind of get it. The Lakers do need Rajon to be focused. But, you know, this idea that you do that at you put him into the starting lineup and make your team worse in order to get him going, I just don't think you would do that for any other player. And, you know, I don't really like the line of thinking there. But all that matters at the end of all of this is that the Lakers get a win. They got their win. They got help from around the league. They won a game that this actually was kind of sort of a must win. They now look ahead to the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll find out tomorrow what the status of Lonzo Ball is going to be. I'm still not particularly optimistic, but that's not really going to shock anybody, I don't think. But you know what? If the Lakers get good news about Lonzo Ball and they go into Milwaukee and what we've seen from the Lakers this year is that they do tend to rise to the level of their competition, just like they do kind of fall to the level of their competition. We'll see what the Lakers can pull off against Milwaukee. They are a very good team, arguably one of the best teams in the NBA. So the Lakers have their work cut out for them. I will be right here. That'll be Friday, so Pete and I will talk about that a little bit more on tomorrow's show. So have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.